It is so important that we understand trauma-informed care in the field of intellectual and developmental disabilities, because there are countless sources of trauma for individuals with IDD.
In the health and human services domain, there is a conventional distinction that is drawn between intellectual and developmental disabilities and mental illness. But make no mistake, the two conditions frequently co-occur. In 2015, the Hogg Foundation published When Disability is a Disguise, an explainer and a call to action on the mental health needs of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. A crucial point is that the mental health needs of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, or IDD, are frequently overlooked in large part because the disabilities overshadow the possible mental health conditions. Hence the title, When Disability is a Disguise. In particular, unrecognized trauma is endemic to this population. Our guest, Dr. Karen Harvey, has been working with adults with IDD for more than 25 years. She is an assistant executive director at ARC Baltimore. She also contributed some case vignettes to When Disability is a Disguise.
Dr. Karen Harvey, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So define, trauma-informed care, and why is it, so important for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities?
Thank you for that question. It is so important that we understand trauma-informed care in the field of intellectual and developmental disabilities, because there are countless sources of trauma for individuals with IDD, meaning intellectual and developmental disabilities. Unbelievable. I have seen so much in bullying and just the effects of the bullying, and also the trauma of having a disability, the aspects often of abuse. The Spectrum Institute did a study in 2012 where they interviewed over 7,000 individuals and families, and they reported that 70% said that they had been either sexually, physically, or financially abused. 90% said that that abuse was ongoing. But out of that group, only 37% reported it. And when asked why they didn't report it, they felt nothing would be done. Ongoing sexual, mm-hmm. physical, horrible abuse. That has impact. That's trauma. So I've been in this field for 30 years. I am very old. And in my 30 years, I've seen over and over again psychologists try to approach behavioral issues as though they were purely kind of ends to a means, and that, okay, people were performing behaviors so that they can get whatever they need in their life because they know no other way to do it, and they found these ways to be manipulative. And so the interventions that we all designed, and I was one of the people doing it, were designed to help people figure out other ways to get what they want. But over and over again, I would do these types of interventions and they wouldn't work, because I finally realized there was these behavioral issues and these emotional issues were coming from a very deep source. They were effects of that kind of abuse. And over again, I would stop and listen and hear stories of sexual abuse everywhere. It was rampant, and often in childhood and throughout childhood at times, and physical abuse and emotional abuse. And I would see finally, this is the source of the behavioral problem. This person is acting out over and over again what their emotional state is, and their emotional state is reflective of the trauma they've endured. And then I studied more and more about post-traumatic stress disorder and realized that so many of these behavioral issues were in fact at times symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD. And once we began to understand that, and my staff and I started doing more therapy, more trauma treatment, and training the direct care staff, and also training teachers in certain venues and aides to an informed care approach, we saw a vast lessening of these behavioral issues. We saw a great change with the individuals that we were trying to help. You know, so the trauma-informed care approach to me is just critical, because we were addressing issues without understanding their causes and their roots. And so in some cases, we even made it worse.
Now, maybe you could, say a little bit more about how it is that, you know, intellectual and developmental disabilities, or IDD, can obscure, to the untrained eye, either mental illness or evidence of past trauma.
Sure, Ike. So many times I've witnessed situations in which people were addressing the disability over the person. Like, okay, this kid has IDD, so we know they're acting out because it's a behavior problem, and they have behavior problems, and this is the set of behaviors, and we have to find rewards and reinforcements to change the behaviors. And not realizing, well, this kid is actually being abused at home, or this kid is being bullied in school, or this entire scenario is at play that everybody has missed, you know, of some kind of trauma. And the kid is in a state of hyperarousal, which is one of the symptoms of PTSD. So they're constantly agitated. They may, you know, fly off the handle. They may break things because they're in a state of feeling unsafe due to the trauma. But because of the label of IDD, we the professionals, I include myself, in the past, often just go to, okay, there's a behavior problem. Kids with IDD have behavioral issues, and miss the actual emotional issue. Also, the other problem is that folks often are minimally verbal or can't express themselves emotionally, even though they have words. And then many other folks don't have words. So the only language they have is their behavior. And then we're not listening and seeing that it's a language. We're thinking the behavior itself is the problem, but they're actually trying to communicate through the behavior. And that happens a lot.
Okay. So, I mean, do you have any personal accounts? I mean, I'm sure that's almost a silly question, because I'm sure that you have countless. But from your dealings with IDD, of how, you know, trauma can manifest in behavior, or perhaps just an illustrative example.
Yes, I have countless experiences of trauma manifesting in behavior and of getting it wrong. Well, one experience, there was a young man who smeared feces, and a friend of mine, actually, this is a great story. A friend of mine was called in to consult, and he said, there's something not right here. There was a family, and the mother had married after a divorce, and she'd been married for about 2 years. And she was very angry with her son with autism, because that son was smearing feces. That's, of course, a horrible behavior. And this boy did not have words. And my friend is an expert in autism, and he was called in, and he spent time with the family. They explained how this is just an intolerable behavior, kind of got the subtle message of the mother, like, how can I, you know, start my new marriage and make this new family all work with this kind of behavior going on. And there was an older child as well. And this older child seemed very troubled. So my friend asked if he could go back and meet again with the kids at a different time. So he actually came back. The older child watched the younger child in the afternoons. He actually came back when the parents weren't there and spent a great deal of time with that older child. And finally, the older child opened up and said the new father was sexually abusing him. And the father had tried to sexually abuse the younger child with autism, and that younger child had smeared feces. Where had he smeared it? Over the doorway. Right around the doorway on the frame. Well, that's genius, right? And instead, everybody's saying, well, smearing the feces is the problem. And I bring up somebody else's experience just because it's, to me, that's the best illustration. And I actually had a similar experience with another young man with autism who was also smearing feces. I hate to gross everybody out as a bad behavior, but I was called in to consult, and the psychologist was very frustrated, said, we've had several plans. We know what he likes. We offer him what he likes, but it doesn't matter. He's still smearing the feces. He never used to do this. He did it maybe 20 years ago when he first came to the program. This is an adult, and we don't know why he's doing it now. So then I ask questions and try to figure out what is going on in this person's life. It's always about their emotional experience. This is a big piece that we discount frequently when we're looking at behavior problems. What emotions are going on, and what is the experience that this person is having? And then they proceeded to tell me, well, in their residential program, and I was consulting with the day, in the residential program, this guy had been burned by a staff person with a pot on his back, which is horrendous and horrible. And he and his housemates, none of them talked, but they brought them to court hoping that somehow that they could testify in some way. And instead, they had to encounter this person who had burned them, and the person got off scot-free because nobody could say anything, and the judge said, I'm sorry, you know, there's no evidence. And that was even further traumatizing. But they said to me, but that was a long time ago. How long was it? Oh, that was about 4 or 5 months ago. So, of course, that's not a long time ago. 20 years is not a long time ago when you've had trauma. 50 years isn't a long time ago if that trauma is still unresolved. So I said, well, okay, but this new, you know, behavior just started. What do you think? Oh, well, nothing's really changed except that the person has a new one-on-one. Well, of course, that's a major change. If you're somebody who's feeling very vulnerable, you've been abused by a staff person, and now in a different setting, you just got a new staff person the person he had felt comfortable with, he had come to work every day and been fine with because he knew that guy and he'd known him for several years. But then that guy quit. So here, 4 or 5 months later, a new hire was put in. This person didn't know anyone. And so this guy is smearing feces. The individual with autism who can't speak is smearing feces to say, you better not hurt me. You better not touch me. You better stay away from me. This is intelligent. So I asked them, is there somebody he knows? Can we find someone he's familiar with who he likes, who can be his one-on-one? And well, they thought, well, we shouldn't have him with a female. I'm like, please do. Please have him with a female if that's someone he feels safe with, because trauma is all about not being safe. And if we can help someone to feel safe, to be with people that they are safe with and that they trust, they can begin to heal. So sure enough, they found this woman that he knew for a long time. She was able to transition into being his one-on-one, and he stopped smearing the feces and he was fine. So over and over again, I'm pulled into situation after situation. You know, another individual was very aggressive and was kicked out of the program where I was because she had thrown the program manager up against the wall and hurt her, and everyone said, okay, she has to go. Well, I changed jobs and I ran into this individual again, and they said to me, you have to help her. You have to help her. She won't stop being aggressive. She has horrible behaviors. She's a giant problem. And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? And they said, well, she just broke a staff's arm with a vacuum cleaner. Now, I will grant you that is a terrible behavior. That's not good. So I had to spend time with this person who I had not dealt with in the last program very well. I'm embarrassed to say, been part of the committee that recommended her being discharged because I agreed with everyone. Oh, yes, we can't handle this aggression. But when I got to know her, you know, and I got to know her well, I found out that there were years of trauma in an institution. She had horrible experiences being sexually abused by staff and by other individuals and physically abused. And then she had many self-injurious behaviors as well, which we see often. She cut, she turned it all on herself, and she never felt safe. And she told me that the minute she thinks somebody might be a bad staff, she has to get rid of them because bad staff hurt you. Well, yes, she'd been raped and physically abused by staff in the past. So she was not trying to hurt people to be aggressive. She was actually trying to protect herself and trying to get rid of people she thought might hurt her. So we redesigned her program and got from her all the aspects of what a safe staff does. And she defined for us, a safe staff will listen to you. A safe staff will pick handy land and shoot some ladder and go fish. Those were her three favorite games. A safe staff will let you watch cartoons, even if it's not age appropriate, and not put their own shows on. A safe staff will go to the mall with you. So we listed all these things and we trained the staff and said, you need to talk to her positively, tell her you like her, tell her she's okay with you, and now do these things that she perceives as safe. This woman was fine, no aggression, for a year and a half. I mean, and this is somebody who was so off the hook where she was attacking people daily. But once we gave her back the control over her life and defined what safe was and trained staff on how to be safe, she changed completely. And, you know, she lived a wonderful life. And then she sadly died from a heart attack because she had gained so much weight. Another thing I see very often with people who've been sexually abused, to make sure no one would ever touch her again. And she had a heart attack and passed. But because of her, I really approach any kind of aggression, property destruction, anything like that, much differently. So that's something that I've learned.
So the National Child Traumatic Stress Network recently developed a training toolkit called The Road to Recovery, supporting children with intellectual and developmental disabilities who've experienced trauma. Now, how much do you know about this toolkit, and how big of a game changer do you think that it could be?
I love this toolkit. It's amazing, and I think it's going to be a very significant game changer, and I am so deeply appreciative of the National Child Traumatic Stress Network and the Hogg Foundation, and in particular to Colleen Horton, you know, who really had this vision, because I think this is it's an amazing training tool and resource both at the same time. So I'm hoping that we can get it out to many professionals who can use this, and it will just heighten the awareness of the impact of trauma on children with IDD and, you know, how to look for that trauma, how to recognize it, how to see the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder and the effects of it. So, you know, I really hope that this can be available to as many professionals as possible. It's really wonderful.
I guess we've pretty much covered everything. And if there's anything more that you'd like to add to kind of to kind of cap off what we've been talking about, go right ahead.
I am so thrilled that we have this toolkit. I see it as so important, and raising the awareness of professionals is essential because we misunderstand behavioral issues in folks with IDD so frequently. And I'm really concerned about the use of restraints, the use of seclusion, the ways in which we address behavioral issues that are really oftentimes symptomatic of the trauma, the absolute hell that many young folks are going through. And they're trying to show us, they're trying to tell us they're not in control. And you know, so important that we recognize this and we treat them correctly. And I think we haven't had interventions based on therapy and used the same therapeutic interventions very frequently that we use with folks without intellectual disabilities with this population. And we often just, you know, respond on a behavioral level and don't use the therapeutic skills that we have as professionals. And I think it's so important. And through this toolkit, we can see that we have to approach things on a therapeutic level. We have to look beneath the behavior for what's going on with the trauma, what's going on emotionally, what are these folks trying to tell us, what's happening in their life, and what kind of supports do they really need. And if we can really give the correct supports, we won't have to be restraining anyone. We won't have to put our hands on a single soul. we can understand what's going on and help people to recover. And that's the key, is to focus on recovery and healing rather than trying to change the person. And when we do that, we have great success. That's been my experience. Thank you.
Okay, Dr. Harvey, a longtime friend of the Hogg Foundation, whose work has informed our own understanding of trauma-informed care, dropping some wisdom on us one more time. We very much appreciate your time, your passion, and the information that you had to share. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. The pleasure was all mine.